So I'm Lorraine Cordero. Tanzania is home to me, and this is where this research study is based. But I have to say really quickly is that, in a sense, we're all related. So just a quick conversation with the other panelists shows that we have a lot more in common than we previously thought coming in. One example is two of us were born in the same clinic in Tanzania. So adolescent diets in the context of household food security is the study. And it's been done in conjunction with the Tanzanian government and with UNICEF, and driven really out of Tufts University, but the analysis is funded by UMass Amherst. Okay, this is just field work where we're surveying an adolescent. No disclosures to report. For those of you that aren't familiar, Tanzania is in East Africa, and we were in Kilosa District, which is in central Tanzania. This is pretty important because I always ask, what is our investment in Africa's children? And you'll hear some comments to that effect as we go along. The definition I use for food security is the one that was derived from the World Food Summit in 1996. And what I will be discussing here is one indicator, which is household dietary diversity. That's the indicator that I will be using. So food security is Africa's most persistent challenge to economic growth. And yet, we see that youth comprise, or will comprise, 33% of the total population of the continent in 2025, a very young population. What we know about adolescents is that in sub-Saharan Africa is that the range in undernutrition is from 15 to 29%, and that's from studies over the past two decades. Okay. The background for this is that there's a lot more research now on food security, and there's an interest in intra-household food allocation, and so this study in particular is at the crux of that. We looked at a sample of adolescents in rural Tanzania, and what we were really interested in seeing was how do adolescents fare in the household in respect to dietary diversity, and how do they compare to their respective households? We conducted a cross-sectional survey in 28 villages. Two were, it was heavy rains and we weren't able to get there. We had a response rate of 94%, but this analytical sample only looks at 670 never married adolescents. The data collection team, and I have to point out that one of them among the males is now, he'll be graduating this year with a degree in medicine. So he does talk a lot about brain drain and came last year to Yale to talk about it. So from a very rural area of Tanzania, it's almost a miracle. Measurements for household food security included a 24-hour diet recall at the household level. And so we calculated the caloric adequacy per adult equivalent for the household, which meant we collected all data on all the ages and the gender of every single household member. And we looked at their nutrient status by that. And we also collected the household diet diversity score, which is the number of food groups that were consumed by each household. This is based on work by a whole host of researchers, some of whom I mentioned there. And there are 12 food groups that are listed under dietary diversity. Those are listed up there. We did the same thing for adolescents. We did 24-hour recalls. We looked at caloric adequacy of the adolescent per their requirements by age and gender. And we did a dietary diversity score, so the number of food groups that the adolescent themselves reported consuming. We collected information on nutritional status, so healths and, heights and weights, in order to derive statistics around body mass index. And we accounted for age and sex. Undernutrition was defined as less than the fifth percentile of the WHO reference population. Okay. We collected information on morbidity as well, and a whole host of illnesses that adolescents reported. So just to let you know who these kids were, The bulk of them were between 10 and 14 years of age. I thought we'd have a lot more AIDS orphans, given that HIV/AIDS is really hitting many parts of Tanzania quite hard. But the majority were not orphans, and 12% were, which is reflective of national statistics on AIDS orphans. Most of the adolescents were children in the households. That was their relationship to the household head. And most of them were enrolled. Now, given that they were younger, 10 to 14, the bulk of them were also enrolled in school. But that doesn't talk about whether they were attending school on a regular basis. A good percentage of them did work, so 50% worked, and their work was mainly in agriculture and farming or herding for the pastoral groups. Okay. Although some were involved in mining and others were involved in as domestic servants. So what does it look like in terms of household food security status for these 28 villages? The red shows severely food insecure households. And these were households that were consuming between 1 to 3 food groups. Now, the consumption of 1 to 3 food groups is really considered to be severely food insecure, because that's what we see in refugee populations that are just coming into refugee camps. 44% were moderately food insecure, which meant that they consumed between 4 to 5 food groups on a daily basis. In terms of adolescents, so looking here and then looking here, this is what adolescents look like. They reported, almost 70% of them reported being severely food insecure. So they reported a higher frequency of consuming just 1 to 3 food groups than their households did. I'm just going to go back and there, okay? And that's pretty important, which means right there that some of these adolescents were actually living in food secure households, but they were experiencing food insecurity. So a scatter plot just aligns two important indicators. On the y-axis is the difference in the adolescent's diet in comparison to the household's diet. And that's mapped across household dietary diversity scores, so the household's food security status. And what you see here is that as a household becomes more food secure, adolescents in that household report higher levels of food insecurity. And when we looked at it across different health and nutritional outcomes, we found that, and this is not unexpected, that among the households that were severely food insecure and moderately food insecure, that the bulk of those adolescents living in those households reported poor health status. But for adolescents living in food secure households, most of them reported, so 25% reported being healthy, whereas only 16% reported being unhealthy. And when it comes to nutritional status, we see similar patterns, but it's more pronounced in severely food insecure households. So 43% of undernourished adolescents lived in food insecure households, which is to be expected. But 16% of undernourished adolescents lived in food secure households, which was not something that we hoped to see. So there's issues of intra-household food distribution that need to be accounted for. I didn't put together the whole map of what our multivariate analyses look like, and we're still in the process of looking at gender as a key variable. Like, does this differ by girls and boys? But what we found in some of our regression analyses is that the village in which adolescents live in, the number of household members that live in each household, and being male were associated with negative experiences in adolescent dietary intakes relative to their households. And what's important with that is that we had a large number of pastoral groups, and in some of those groups, the household members were in excess of 21 household members, and that definitely seemed to influence individual household members' intake levels. So what we conclude from this is that adolescents may continue to be vulnerable to food insecurity and dietary inadequacies, even when their households experience food security. And it's a huge area for thinking about food aid and school feeding programs and other initiatives, food assistance initiatives in a developing country context, which is, even though we may target families, not all members of those families may be reaping the benefits of that assistance. And so the recommendation is then we need longitudinal studies. And so I'm happy when you say you're proposing to do them. And we need to look at gender disparities. Some research has shown gender disparities. Craig Hadley in Ethiopia showed different experiences of food insecurity by girls and boys. And we also need to look at our measures of food security in more detail. We have multiple measures. The most latest measure is done by Coates and Frangillo, Patrick Webb, and it's called HFIAS, so Household Food Insecurity Assessment Measure. It's a comprehensive measure. It's being tested in several country contexts, but it was just in its development when we were doing this study. So the challenges of it, besides getting stuck in the mud, is that we really anticipated the following problems, but the actual problems we had in data collection were quite different. We thought we'd have problems with consent, the farming schedule, determining HIV status, adolescents reporting pubertal status, and just traveling from village to village. Sampling was a huge issue. We sampled from village registries, and so each village had to send their registries to the central headquarters in the district, and then we had to photocopy all those registries and sample from a master sample. It was very, very cumbersome. Dietary recalls were quite difficult. People had a hard time remembering, particularly households, but we managed to do that. We used things like salt to represent rice or flour as a measure. So if they were going to say, we consumed one cup of flour, we used rice to have them show us what that one cup of flour looked like. I mean, we used salt. And for some people, they'd never seen salt that was sea salt. And we used sand. We used sand from the ocean. And people were fascinated with that. This is inland. And language was an issue as well. We had several different languages that were spoken, and many of the people did not speak Kiswahili, which is the national language. But overall, a wonderful group of people. This was funded under UNICEF, which was doing a baseline study in the area. This was a component of their baseline study. And out of two funds out of Tufts University. And then the analysis is funded out of the Department of Nutrition at UMass Amherst. And that's the district executive director on the bottom there. She was absolutely amazing. So, okay. So I'll take questions if anybody has them. Yes. We are, and we've collected physical activity data in addition, so they actually reported they did 24-hour physical activity recalls, on and so we matched it up with their dietary data. Yes. I can just tell you that boys were twice as malnourished as girls in this population, so it really says a lot for what we understand about adolescent nutritional status. And now I've got a jet. Thank you.